I want to know, have I gone too far? Have I sunk to a brand new low? That's Treble Charger. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. Brand new low for the Blue Jays on Thursday. They take a season-worst whooping, 13-0, from Brandon Lau, Josh Lowe, and the Rays. It was one that required Ernie Clement to pitch. It was one that had Chris Bassitt referencing any number of demons that players are dealing with after the game. Really great stuff. Tuesday's trade deadline cannot come soon enough. There is still a series to play before then against the Texas Rangers at home here this weekend. It is Caribbean Carnival down at the ballpark. Cool. Those are the things we have to look forward to at this point in the season. And then it's a doubleheader Monday in Baltimore and then the trade deadline on Tuesday. Busy couple of days ahead around Major League Baseball. That got started last night. AJ Puck got dealt from the Marlins to the Diamondbacks for a pair of prospects. Randy Arozarena, fresh off that 13-0 Rays win, got dealt to the Mariners for a pair of prospects and a player to be named later. We're not quite cooking, but things are starting to get going here. So it should be a really fun, maybe fun's not the right word. It should be an eventful couple of days. Let's see how Keegan Matheson of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com, is feeling about it. Keegan, how we doing this morning, buddy?
Yeah, fun is a stretch here, Blake, but, engaged, we'll say. It's going to be an interesting time. It is in a nervous Twitter-checking time. I'm already a phone addict. It's always in my hand anyways, but especially this time of year, it's going to be an interesting few days through here, and then beautiful Baltimore, cool, breezy Baltimore I get to cover the trade deadline from.
So there are a lot of components to the trade deadline, right? There are going to be trades. There'll be new players in. There'll be players we don't like. Tonight might be our goodbye to Yusei Kikuchi. I wouldn't even say might. Probabilistically, it is our goodbye to Yusei Kikuchi. And that's assuming he doesn't get yanked from the game between now and 7:07. The other thing that's going to happen is guys are going to audition for 2025 jobs. The only thing to come out of yesterday's game of any note is Ernie Clement with an ERA of 9. Looks like one of the best relievers this team has. Has he made the case for his 2025 bullpen inclusion?
Man, 9 ain't bad. They're going to need 9 relievers next year. I mean, my God, they're going to need multiple relievers next season. The bullpen has almost quietly been bad, as quietly as you can be. One of the worst bullpens in baseball and one of the worst bullpens we've seen here in a lot of years, frankly. We've talked so much about the offense, and rightfully so. And the bullpen, of course, there's been injuries as well, most notably Romano recently. So it hasn't been piled on as much. But my goodness, if you live in the local Toronto area and you can throw 80, you got a shot.
Yeah, Chris LaRue, get out of that radio broadcast booth.
There
John Axford, get out of the pit at all these concerts we're going to. You guys are getting called up. I mean, look, I am being a little facetious about it, but the bullpen's also been really bad. And you're right. It doesn't get the same headlines because what's the difference turning a 6-0 deficit into a 13-0 deficit? Like, it looks uglier, but like, who cares in the big scheme? You know, there are Pythagoras cares because for Pythagorean win-loss and expected win-loss, it matters. But the bullpen has turned a lot of small deficits into slightly larger deficits. But Keen, the thing that this kind of highlights, first of all, is that this could get even uglier these last 2 months here. Like, you look at that bullpen and you take Jimmy Garcia out of that. I would imagine if things are really bad, you know, they're certainly not going to rush Jordan Romano. Possible starters get shut down or skip the start here and there. Like, this has the potential to get even uglier than the baseball we've seen so far. Maybe not as ugly as yesterday, but generally speaking, this could be a tough August and September here.
It can always get worse, baby. I'm always a believer that it can get worse in baseball. But when you look ahead to these last couple of months, you remove Jimmy Garcia. Maybe Chad Green is someone that a team takes a run at the trade deadline. I think they'll trade, let's call it 1.5 relievers as the over-under. I don't know if Trevor Richards moves after how this has gone recently, but there's a lot of teams looking for help. Maybe they move a second reliever. I think where it gets really messy, Blake, is that you probably need Bowden Francis as that number 5 starter.
Monday,
and frankly,
probably.
I like that idea. Yeah, starting Monday. And I would like to see Bowden in the rotation. It did not look good early this year, but that experiment had to end pretty quickly. Give him 10 starts down the stretch, and then you know for sure, can he be a depth starter or is he a swingman? Both answers are fine, but not knowing, that's a bad place to be. So that could be an interesting stretch. But at that point, do you need to have someone like a Paolo Espino type, a long man from AAA, somebody in that bullpen, I think you do, to eat up innings. Because right now there's a lot of single inning guys. You're going to need to have someone to come in and just eat some slop, eat some ugly innings, because there probably will be some through August and September. And this bullpen right now, when you look at a Brandon Little, Enesis Cabrera, there are some guys who are auditioning for bigger roles next year, but there's a lot of just hanging on at this point. Pretty much everything has gone wrong in that bullpen.
It's everything except Jimmy Garcia, I guess, and Chad Green too. But there are some underlying indicators that if you play this Chad Green thing out a couple more weeks, you know, that 2 ERA maybe looks like a 4 ERA before, which isn't bad, but it's not a 182 ERA or wherever it sits right now. Keegan, I do want to circle back to Bowden Francis after, because I do want to talk about your piece that you wrote for BlueJays.com about the five players who have, who have the most on the line audition-wise the rest of the season. But first, I want to talk a little bit more about yesterday's game, unfortunately, and a quote that came out of it after. So Chris Bassitt didn't have a bad start. He didn't have, he didn't quite look like he looked in May and June there, where he was, one of the best pitchers in the entire American League, but it wasn't that bad. And then he hands the reins off and everything comes unraveled. And after the game, he says, "I would say there are a lot of so-called demons many of us are fighting right now." There were follow-ups, of course, and clarifications. What did you make of that quote and just the general Chris Bassitt conversation after the game?
You never know what you're going to get with Chris Bassitt after a ball game. His last time out was the shorter version of Chris Bassett's. I remember asking him what he deemed success for the rest of the year, and he said the word playoffs. I asked him what success mean for you down the stretch, and he said the word playoffs. Then other days you get a much more expansive and thoughtful version of Bassitt. And both are fine. I know we're not the best part of anyone's day. That's all right. But when Bassitt is expansive like this, you can see why he is one of the most interesting voices on this team. And a guy who has been around and done what he has done in the league, players respect that. Coaches respect that. He's a coach himself in some ways, really, in that clubhouse. And he gets to the heart of this, is that it's just not very fun. If people listening to us right now, Blake, are sitting at home having a bad time every night watching the game, the players aren't enjoying it either. Yeah, they're probably making a more attractive paycheck than any of us talking about this, but they are going through it in every possible way right now. There's nothing enjoyable about this because it's been a slow death in a lot of ways. It's been so drawn out. There's been flickers of hope through May and June and early July. Will this be the run? Will this be the run? In recent years, Blake, we've seen the momentum build, and there's the champagne shower, and then it flops. It dies suddenly on October 4th or 5th or 6th, whatever it is, every year, it seems. But this has been a slow death, and frustration will seep out and pop out at even surprising times. We're going to see that more down the stretch. This is not a team of young kids just happy to be here. This is not 2019, like a rebuilding year around a new core. This is the end of something that was supposed to be much different than this. And Bassitt's comments fascinated me. They really did. And I think they did a good job of getting to what this experience is like for players, which ain't good. It's not fun, especially these next 5 days. I think there's going to be a lot of relief when July 31 rolls around.
Well, and that's part of, part of this is, he certainly, some of what he was referencing had to do with the trade deadline and the uncertainty and things like that. So if there are demons, maybe half of them get exercised Tuesday at 6:01. Guys know where they're going to be. Guys are, hey, okay, I'm staying put, barring like getting DFA'd or something like that. There's that stability. Yeah. But do you worry when that is the type of language being used, that is the overall feel that kind of permeates that clubhouse right now, that, I mean, look, most of the turnaround to 2025 that they're going to try to sell and they're going to try to do is about personnel, right? Like, it's not, you don't worry as much about, oh, last year sucked, is that going to carry over? But it does, I am like a small percentage worried that, hey, a trade deadline and playing out the last 2 months of relatively meaningless, but like, there's a potential for a little bit of that to carry over if they don't get off to a banger of a start in 2025.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to be a bad baseball team. There are better and worse ways to have a bad season. And this one isn't feeling great lately because of the expectations. Now, if the Blue Jays were a young team that was supposed to miss the playoffs and they were 10 games under right now, we're talking about upside. We're talking about, yeah, they lost, but this starter has a better fastball now. This third baseman is not striking out as much. That doesn't matter right now. It doesn't matter at all. It's only about winning for this team. And when it's only about winning and you have a bad year, it's ugly. There's no silver lining that you can take really from any of this. And when we look into 2025, Blake, if this is what the Blue Jays want the conversation to be, that there's another year left, 2025, come out next season, buy your tickets, et cetera, what's going to be different about that? That's the question I can't answer yet. There's a lot of time and it can be different, absolutely. But why is it going to be, and why should we believe that it will be different next year? That's the question hanging over all of this right now. And the answer to that starts right now. It starts with how this deadline is handled. It starts with what we see down the stretch. It starts with how we see the Blue Jays managing their players down the stretch. I'm talking about rotation. How far do you push a guy in a season that's already over? It's going to be uncomfortable. And the vibes of it all matter. How it feels matters. I fall into the trap of romanticizing these things sometimes, but I think it's important to keep a foot in that trap. How it feels still matters going into next year. You want this team to be invigorated and rallying around this failure instead of sitting on the negatives of this failure. That's where coaching comes in. That's where managing comes in. That's where the front office comes in. But if, again, like, if this is going to be one more year, 2025, why is it going to be different? And when you're talking about demons, that's probably not a good place to start with a couple months left in this season.
Yeah, when you're looking at, hey, off-season acquisitions and subtractions from the roster, you don't want demons to be in either of those columns. Not a great thing. So, look, how you make this more competitive in 2025? You said it's a question you can't answer right now. But you did have your most recent newsletter that people can subscribe to get in their inbox every week from BlueJays.com, tackled this a little bit. So let's recenter on the trade deadline here. We've talked a lot about who is going to get traded. We have an idea of who is absolutely going to get traded, who is available, who is slightly less available, etc. In your estimation, what do the Blue Jays need to be targeting or accomplishing in what they get back for these? Whether that's nearer term guys, guys who are major league ready, just improving the depth of the farm system. If you are pulling the trade, if you yourself, Keegan Mathieson, are pulling the trigger on these trades over the next couple of days, what are you trying to accomplish in terms of those returns?
Prospects who are closer to the big leagues and pitching depth at this point. I think the Blue Jays not afford to be waiting around right now. And again, this is all about 2025. If they were tearing down and rebuilding, you just get the best prospect you can. I don't care if they're 17 years old. Well, you got time. But right now, if the Blue Jays are going for it next year, you're trying to find another team's version of a Spencer Horwitz, a Leo Jimenez, something like that. Another team's version of the guy that's almost there, but he's blocked by a big leaguer. Something like that.
The Teoscar trade again.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're the Blue Jays right now, I think that you want guys who are old enough to maybe help you next year. If not next year, then certainly close enough to take over in 2026. When this whole thing might just be burned to the ground. Some guys who line up with Jimenez, with Barger, with Horwitz. I mean, hopefully someday with Ricky Tiedemann, we'll see. Or Elvis Martinez, we'll see. But I also think the Blue Jays, Blake, could get out ahead of some business from this offseason over the next 5 days. Whatever you want to call it, soft selling, hybrid approach. I'm sure there's a good buzzword for it. But we've seen year after year that this front office does not like to wait until 11:59 to submit their essay. They like to get out ahead and do some business when they're a little bit more in control. Think of the Whit Merrifield deal, maybe as an example, a guy who had some control left. If the Blue Jays need rotation depth and bullpen depth next year, this is a shot. This is a shot to get out ahead of that as well. So I think there's going to be some prospect targets, obviously, but I also think that there could be a couple of trades with 2025 in mind, actual competing in mind. And if that happens, it'll look out of place. but for a reason. And that will signal they really do want to go for this next year.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's an interesting thing, right? Like, we're talking about them purely as sellers, but there is within that the potential to pick up a guy with a little bit of term or whatever, whether that's the trade return or hey, we just got all these prospects in, we're going to turn around and do some work now. It would look a little odd optically to add, but if it's, like you said, if it's an add that you were going to try to make in the offseason anyway and it's available to you now, no need to hesitate there regardless. So that's good perspective. You lean on the side of more nearer term prospects and things like that. You mentioned the possibility that, hey, if they were blowing it up, how much do you think this 2025 retool, the like, hey, we're going to be competitive again in 2025. Look, Vlad and Bo don't have extensions yet. Maybe that happens in the offseason. I'm a little bit skeptical on it, just given the market forces and how up and down both of those guys have been. All of those veteran pitchers, if they're not dealt now, will be a year further into their 30s, a year closer to free agency, et cetera. Do you think this front office is going to operate, hey, we're going to compete again in 2025, but here's our finger sort of Damocles over the eject button on this court? Like, do you think 2025 has the potential to be a 2024 again, but more aggressively if things don't get off to a good start?
It feels a lot like a 2024, a rebranded. It's the third, fourth pivot. How many pivots in are we? I'm kind of losing track at this point. But this front office, when you go back to even Shapiro and Atkins through their Cleveland days, they know what a proper teardown looks like. A teardown can be done very well, and it can set you up very nicely for the future. But we're not talking about how we're going to feel in 2029 right now. Blue Jays fans want to see something next year that's worth watching. And I do think that next year has the potential, Blake, to be extremely uncomfortable from day one. Like, I'm talking day one of spring training. I'm standing there in Florida on February, 15th or 16th, and asking players about this exact thing. It has the potential to really hang over that season. And it will naturally, just from Vladdy and Bo's contract situations. Those are going to be the first questions on day one of spring training. Not what are you excited for, not tell me about the next big signing, why will this team be great, but is the clock ticking and how loudly does that clock tick? It's really, really not comfortable. And I think next year, there's no pivot for 2026. I think this has to align with Vladdy and Bo. And if it does not work next year, then we are sitting here on this exact day next year talking about an absolute teardown. And that time could come pretty quickly, depending on how they get out of the gates, especially if the season looks anything like this. So I do think that that's going to be a big narrative immediately next year. There won't even be that 1 month grace period where you wait and see how they go. We're talking day one of spring training.
And I didn't even, at least with some of the issues, I didn't feel that grace period for me personally this year. Like when that offense got out to a bad start, I was like, this isn't a month of this. This is 7 months of this. And now it'll be like, this is 13 months of this. 13 baseball months, like 25 calendar months. It's not it's going to be a high leverage, high pressure spot. With respect to that, the deadline is Tuesday. We obviously, the word is out there. If you are a Toronto Blue Jay and you do not have a contract for 2025 yet, you are very available in trade. If you do have a contract for 2025 and beyond, that's maybe a little less so. What have you made of the kind of in-between guys like a Chad Green or Isaiah Kiner-Falefa who do have term, but make a decent amount of money, would probably be of interest to a contender. Those guys, to me, those two guys kind of exist in a tier of their own in terms of availability. Would you agree with that? And what is your feel on the availability of those two?
I do. That's an interesting middle ground when you look at it there. Maybe a step further would be someone like Chris Bassitt. But if you want to win next year, you need a Chris Bassitt. So I wouldn't group him in with them totally. Chad Green's a really interesting one for me. He has been for a while. That is a big price tag next year. Now, worthwhile, because Chad Green's a really good pitcher and everyone likes the guy. Coming from New York right into Toronto, that reputation has held up absolutely. So teams are going to be interested in him. There is not a lot of reasons to stay away from Chad Green other than the injuries he's had in the past. But show me a healthy pitcher, you can't. So Chad Green is going to be really interesting. I think that there will be teams interested in him. And that's a decision the Blue Jays will have to make. There's a financial consideration to all of this, too. Money is going to drive a lot of this trade deadline. I know that's not the exciting part for people, but money is really important right now, especially when we talk about a Turner, a Kiermaier eating some of that cash as well. There's going to be some gymnastics mathematically coming up here. But when you look at Green and Kiner Falefa, maybe Green would be a likelier one to be considered. Kiner Falefa has, A, I was wrong about that deal. I see the sense in it now. Seeing him around the clubhouse in particular, I'm really impressed with Isaiah Kiner Falefa. I think they would want to hold on to him for that potential run next year. But Green is a guy, if you're going to completely rebuild your bullpen, he's a guy that you can try to move, get some value for right now, and then attempt to replace in free agency. They've got to grab a bunch of relievers in free agency next year. Also depends on who you think Jordan Romano will be next year. That's another question for the Jays. But that's when the deadline for me, Blake, would start to get interesting. Right now, dealing only expiring players, it's not putting me to sleep exactly, but it's not lighting me on fire. When you look at the Kikuchi and Jimmy Garcia deals, yeah, the Blue Jays can get some value there. But beyond that, the upside is very limited. And the Blue Jays need upside. That is what they need, offensively, pitching, wherever it comes. They need some upside. And there aren't many avenues to that if they take this more conservative approach right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you see with the deals that just happened, right? Like A.J. Puck, you know, comparable to Jimmy Garcia. I'd probably put Jimmy Garcia a hair ahead of him, but he just got dealt, and it was, hey, the number eight prospect in Arizona's system, but also a guy who was just returned off Rule 5 a minute ago in Davison de los Santos, and then like the number 21 guy in Arizona system. So good reliever, and you get a number eight and a number 21 from a mid-level system. That's not nothing, but you know, if you do a couple of those trades, you know, does it meaningfully change? Does it maybe get the Jays from 23rd on MLB pipeline to 18th? Sure. That matters. Those are extra bodies. But yeah, in terms of the 2025 outlook, you have to do more, I think, than just tweaking here. Okay, let's take a little bit of a pivot here. You mentioned Bowden Francis a little earlier. Our expectation from conversations around the ballpark this week is Jays can add a 27th man for that doubleheader Monday. They'll need an extra starter because everyone's, you know, still on turn. There's no off day before then. Bowden Francis starts one of those games. He has had two ridiculous starts at AAA since he went back down. I believe his ERA on the season every time he's gone down is below one. What are you looking for from him if he does come up Monday? Because we won't talk to you by then.
Yeah, with Bowden, it's all about that fifth and sixth inning. Is he still throwing hard? Is he still maintaining that? That's natural for everybody as you're trying to stretch out as a starter. But for Bowden in particular, and he's talked about that through the year. In spring, I loved Bowden Francis for this season. You heard a lot of his teammates, Chris Bassitt included, who does not waste any empty words, as we know, really praising Bowden Francis as a guy on this team. I've been surprised it did not work out as naturally, but I would like to see Bowden Francis given a role, given a set role for 2 months and say, hey, do this exact thing over and over until the end of the season and see where it lands. Not getting yanked around, not pitching one inning one day for the next, but just go start 10 games. If it blows up, then you know next year Bowden Francis is a 2-3 inning reliever. That's valuable too. They could use one right now. But if it works, the Blue Jays have pitching depth next year that they desperately need. And one day, Blake, this luck is going to run out. Every time I say luck, I need to catch myself and say that the training staff and these veteran starters, they nail it. They really do, and I'm impressed by that. But every year, the Blue Jays deal with maybe one injury and someone saves them. Look back a couple of years, it was Ross Stripling. This year, they haven't had to go to that number 7, 8, 9 starter. A lot of teams are down at their number 10, 11 starter by the end of the year. If the Blue Jays have to do that this year, last year, the year before, they're toast. They need that depth, and some of that needs to come internally. Bowden Francis could be a great option there, and I'm looking forward to seeing this down the stretch. He's a guy who's really on that line. Is he or is he not an MLB starter? And going back to the start, I think it is, Blake, all about that fifth inning, the sixth inning. Does he sustain his fastball at 95? Or does it dip to 92 and get hit hard? That's what it's all about.
And the one thing I'd add to that, just from having scouted his AAA starts, and obviously like you being a believer in Bowden Francis coming into this year, and like him last year, even when he got called up in a relief role, I would like to see that fastball used a little bit less. Like, I know that You got to lead with the fastball. That's the way a lot of guys pitch. It can be 94-ish. But when you look at what he's done in the minor leagues, you look at when he's been successful in the majors, it's the curveball and the splitter that are getting the swing and miss. Yeah. That like he hasn't allowed a hit off the curveball in AAA this year at all. And the splitter, I think, has allowed one hit and just gets a ton of swing and miss as well. So obviously those are still pitches in progress and he's going to need the fastball. But when your fastball is a sub-elite fastball and it's something you throw high in the zone a lot, like there's a risk to that. So I would like to see him, you know, mix that up a little bit. You mentioned...
I like sub-elites. That's a nice one. I want to start grouping some things in my own life as just sub-elite. Are they terrible? Are they average? I can't tell you.
Look, man, there's been enough negativity on the show over the first 4 months. We're going to start using using creative terms. Okay, before I let you go here, you've covered a bunch of deadlines now. Do you have a favorite deadline move, a favorite deadline story, a favorite deadline experience from your years on the beat?
Man, a lot of anxiety at the deadline, a lot of anxiety making sure you check your phone. And the real sweet spot, Blake, is kind of setting that cutoff time of when can I conceivably say that I am in bed if something big breaks. So, you know, I try to set that line around 11:30 p.m. The Blue Jays do a lot of late night business. They really do.
Tulo.
My horror stories are more in Tulo is a great one just before I got on the beat. My horror stories are more from the off season. I think I vividly remember, I think it was either Chris Bassett or Kevin Gausman. It was like a 10 p.m. signing when I believe I was enjoying myself at Sneaky D's and I had to quickly get home and put on a suit and tie. Thankfully, during the deadline, I am peak anxiety, phone in my hand, which isn't all that different from the rest of the year. But, man, interested to see where these next few days go.
Man, we should... It's too late for me to pitch this. I got 4 hours to do on Tuesday. We really should do it live from Sneaky D's and just like I'll have a King's Crown right here. The sneaky style wings coming in for every transaction. It'll be like hot ones, but with every guest that comes on, we could share a wing, share a nacho. We won't get caught flat footed. Yeah. we'll do that once you're back off the road though. Man, thanks so much for taking the time out. Keep up the great work. And yeah, everyone subscribe to that newsletter. Keep an eye out for those book updates that are coming.
Hey, coming slowly, but yes. Surely.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Have a good one, man. I'll see you down at the park later.
You got it, buddy. We'll see you there.
Keegan Mathison of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. Again, they're in addition to all the great work, keeping us up to date on Twitter, keeping us abreast of things at BlueJays.com. You can also subscribe to that newsletter and then get Keegan's, you know, that newsletter piece tends to be a little bit more of Keegan's take than reporting. And it's a, you know, a valuable thing to pop up in your inbox once a week there. Also answers a lot of your questions, in those notebooks. And that'll probably be more the case after the deadline, I would guess, not to be his editor for him. But yeah, as we head toward, there are less things to talk about that are, tippy top of everyone's mind. So by the way, I mentioned it earlier, there were a couple trades yesterday. We'll talk about them more throughout the show. Trisha Whitaker is going to join us at 11 o'clock. She's on the Apple TV Plus broadcast tonight. There's no SportsCenter broadcast on television of this game. It's an Apple TV Plus game. But she also covers the Rays. She's their sideline reporter. So she would have got the news that Randy Arozarena got dealt. I saw her having a lengthy conversation with Kevin Kiermaier yesterday. He obviously announced this week that he's going to retire at the end of the season. We'll talk to Kennedy Landry, who covers the Rangers for Rangers.com and MLB.com. We'll tee up that Rangers series. The Rangers now, by the way, have won 5 in a row, and they're only 2.5 out in what is suddenly a crazy American League West. So lots to talk about today. Lots of trade stuff to sprinkle in. We'll look at some of your texts as well, the 590, 590. If you send them, standard message and data rates may apply. Right now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll tag in John Becker of FanGraphs. He does the top of the order, kind of morning, get you set for the day a couple times a week over there, and he's the transaction guy. He's the guy with as many spreadsheets for baseball as I have for basketball. We got a couple trades to break down now, a couple market setters. Let's take a break. Let's talk to John Becker. Let's see where the relief pitching market specifically is at heading into the deadline here as Jays Talk Plus continues on Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. That's a little emotional motion sickness there for you, which is probably what most fans feel at the trade deadline when you are trading away players that you have come to like, know it's the right move, but it's a little up and down. Tonight could be Yusei Kikuchi's last start as a Toronto Blue Jay. He will throw opposite Andrew Heaney as the Rangers are here to visit us. And then, yeah, we expect Yusei Kikuchi will probably be dealt by Tuesday's trade deadline. We got a start on the trade stuff late last night. The Mariners acquiring Randy Rosarena from the Rays, the Diamondbacks acquiring reliever AJ Puck from the Marlins. Let's talk to John Becker of Fangraphs about it. He's got top of the order up at Fangraphs for you a couple times a week to set the stage. It's transaction season. But John, before we talk about those big additions, huge addition to foul territory yesterday. You're big time now, man.
Yeah, you know, doing the media circuit pre-trade deadline is a great time for me, both refreshing Twitter and yeah, making some media appearances. Not great for my data usage and my phone usage, but I'll worry about that later.
Yeah, you got one of the Fangraphs sweaters on there, by the way. Is that a thing?
I do.
Oh,
yeah,
that's so sharp. That's a good look, man. Okay, so we got some transactions last night. I mentioned them off the top there. I guess like let's start at a high level, because I do want to talk a little bit more about AJ Puck and Hunter Harvey, the deal that happened a couple weeks ago and how we set the reliever market. But your snap reaction to the Rosarena trade, which is, you know, a little bit of a bigger name one, I think, especially since the Rays had just beat the Jays 13-0 like 4 minutes before that.
Yeah, you know, I think the Mariners very, very obviously needed bats, and clearly they believe that Rosarena is over that really horrible funk that he was in the first 6 weeks or so of the season, and by that he is better than that and is a lot closer to what he's been since then. You know, with JP Crawford out, with Julio Rodriguez out, they were more desperate than any contender by far for offense. So to jump the market just a little bit and start that bat market when they're right there with the Astros and get those couple of extra games of Rosarena makes a lot of sense for them. And on the Rays side of things, I mean, this is just what the Rays do. They're going to believe their internal evaluation of the prospects that they're getting. Rosarena is making $8.1 million this year, has two more years of arbitration left. So you're looking at, you know, over $10 million each year, maybe pushing $20 million for that last year. And, you know, they're just going to keep churning out these cheaper guys who they think could hit close to as well, if not just as well as Rosarena has these last few years.
Yeah, and there's some evidence that Rosarena has turned it around, getting back to a more pull-heavy approach to kind of unlock that batting average on balls in play that he's always done so well with, because him and Isak Paredes just dink the balls in down the left field line just past third base. And, yeah, he's been hot lately. And what a landing spot. You join the Mariners, you get three games against the White Sox to get you going, who the Rangers just swept for four. So I guess that is the other question that flows from this is, the Mariners have squandered a 10-game lead in the American League West. There are now three teams in the Astros, the Mariners, and the Rangers who are all within 2.5 games of each other. The Astros and Rangers came in with World Series aspirations. The Rangers are the defending champs. The Astros are always kind of in that mode and have played themselves back into being buyers here. How much are you anticipating those three teams being among the most active between now and Tuesday? I know the Mariners don't have all the budget in the world, but that's suddenly probably the most interesting race in baseball.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to put too much weight into it, but I also don't think that it would be unreasonable at all to say, you know, whoever has the best trade deadline and whoever gets the most out of who they acquire at the trade deadline will win that division. There's some pretty obvious holes on each of those teams. I think the Rangers are largely going to fill those by getting guys back off the injured list. But the Astros and the Mariners have sort of had depth problems all season. The Astros on the pitching side and losing Kyle Tucker, the Mariners on the offensive side, of course. And, you know, not just making the playoffs, but even performing well in the playoffs. I mean, you need that production from 6 through 9 in your batting order, from, you know, those middle reliever types, and from the back end of your rotation. So there's some obvious upgrades that each of those teams need to make. And you know, you win and lose a lot of games, both now and at the playoffs, depending on what that, you know, back half of your roster can accomplish for you.
And in the Mariners' case, they were able to do this without touching the very top of their farm system. I think the latest Baseball America had them with 8 guys in the top 100. They gave up the number 14 prospect in their system and the number 15 prospect in their system based on the latest midseason Baseball America rankings, as well as a player to be named later. 2 prospects, by the way, who were the 4th and 6th round picks in 2023. So, you know, not the very high end of the system, but the Rays know what they're doing generally. I do want to talk to you about prospect theory in general and how we contextualize prospect returns. But first, are you like me? Like, you could look on a prospect's Fangraphs page and like within 2 minutes, you're like, okay, I could sell you on this guy, even if I don't believe it. Like there's always something to like.
Absolutely. I think especially when they're traded and you sort of know the acquiring team's stance on certain types of prospects, you know, I looked at the 2 guys that the Rays got without knowing too much about either of them and said, okay, I can see why these guys appeal to the Rays. The Rays have a type. Every team has a type when they're acquiring prospects.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to do. So the other thing that we need to be careful of, obviously, is, you know, you guys do a lot of great work at Fangraphs with prospects, Eric Longenhagen and Tester Roskin and everyone else, you know, putting out those lists of top prospects in the system. Everyone's got to check the date on those articles, though, because a preseason list is very different than a midseason list. I think Baseball America is the only place that's put out their full midseason top 30s. Yeah, and I don't even think they're there for all 30 teams, but MLB pipelines will come at some point with Eric's work at Fangraphs. Some teams have been more recent. Got to be careful with that. What are you doing to try to contextualize, like, when you see these trades come in, like, how are you evaluating what the prospect return is? Like, obviously, these are... It's not apples to oranges, but it's like Granny Smith apples to some other kind of, I don't know, gala apples or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, so I think, you know, definitely looking at the date for sure, looking at multiple sources is always a good idea because you can't just take one person's word as the truth. So I try to read multiple reports to formulate an opinion. And, you know, I think that looking at the evaluation of the player for what they are, you know, whether it's on a top 100 or the future value number that is assigned to them by Fangraphs and then Baseball Prospectus has overall future potential. That's a lot more important than saying, oh, well, these are prospects number 14 and 15 in the Mariner system, because, you know, you look at a team like the Angels, who has a very shallow farm system. 14 and 15 in their system is going to mean a lot less than it does in the Mariner system. So, you know, that's where you can get some misleading takes of like, oh, why couldn't my team beat this because this was our 14 and 15 and I'd be totally fine giving them up. Well, you know, maybe they'd be the Mariners 21 and 22.
Yeah, that's where those future value rankings, you said, Baseball Prospectus, Eric and them put it when they do their top list, you know, a 40 plus or a 45 or a 50, whatever, you got to be careful of that. And obviously, if the Jays make trades, we'll contextualize all of that stuff here. So the other trade was the Marlins traded AJ Puck to the Diamondbacks for Davison De Los Santos, who is, you know, to use these points, Baseball America says, hey, we were about to update. He would have been number 8 in Arizona's system. Also an interesting guy because he was just Rule 5 drafted and then returned. They also pick up Andrew Pintar, who's a little further down. He's a 5th-round pick a couple years ago. In terms of market setting for that, we also have the Hunter Harvey deal from a couple weeks ago that we can look at, where the Nationals got, you know, like Caden Wallace is like a pretty well thought of prospect. They also picked up the number 39 pick in the draft. What do you make of those two trades together and how we're looking at the top of the relief pitching market here?
Yeah, you know, I think you could argue for sure that even with Puck's extra year of control, and I think I might prefer Puck to Harvey outright, the Nationals might have done better for Harvey than the Marlins did for Puck. I was a little bit surprised that Davison De Los Santos was the guy who headlined that. I mean, he's performed a lot better in Double A and Triple A than he had at any other level in any year prior, but there are still some concerns there. I saw a tweet from Jared Seiler at Baseball Prospectus this morning that his chase rate is 43%. So that's tough to make work at the major league level for sure. I see it maybe as the case of the Marlins just, again, having a type and Peter Bendix in their new front office thinking, hey, we really like this guy and here's some things we can work on with him. Whereas I think the Royals, it might have just been, you know, really trying to go all in. And I thought it was maybe a little bit of an overpay. I think Hunter Harvey's a solid, not great reliever, good setup man type. But, you know, the 39 overall pick plus, you know, guy who was in their system, I think number seven, and I think still in the top 10-ish for the Nationals. I mean, that's a lot to give up for a setup man for just over a year. So it's tough to sort of say, okay, this is what the price for relievers is going to be. I think it's going to be very team dependent, but I don't think that you can say, oh, well, AJ Puck didn't get quite as much as some people maybe thought he would return, so maybe Tanner Scott will be cheaper because it's the same front office. It really just depends on who they're trading with, I think, and just what the preferences are.
Yeah, Andrew Scott's in there, or Tanner Scott, rather, Andrew Nardi. By the end, your guy Calvin Foce is going to be closing,
yeah.
So you'll get your wish there. When you look at the remaining relief pitcher market, and you don't have to give it a firm ranking because I'm putting you on the spot here, but you look at the Jays who have Jimmy Garcia available, how high do you think Jimmy Garcia ranks for teams among the relievers that we might see dealt between now and Tuesday?
You know, I think if he had been healthy all year, he'd be right up there with Tanner Scott. I think that he's looked good since coming off the injured list. I think it was Ken Rosenthal the other day who wrote that teams, though, might want to make sure he can work back-to-back days, which he hasn't since coming back off the injured list. So that tamps down his value a little bit. I still think they could get a solid return. I mean, I believe the Marlins got Brian De La Cruz for him when Garcia was pitching a lot worse and they traded him to the Astros. So I think, you know, the Blue Jays could get a very solid piece for him. But of course, there is that, you know, injury history in the very recent past sort of hanging over his head a little bit. But I do think that teams will still value him pretty strongly.
The difficulty with him pitching in back-to-back games is the Jays have to be competitive in back-to-back games. No sense using him in a 13-0 game just to get him right. A rep on a second consecutive day. Okay, a couple other non-Blue Jays trade notes. Mason Miller, we could probably take off the list. He takes his non-pitching hand and he punches a padded table after a win and breaks his pinky. Again, non-pitching hand after a win, padded table. What a bizarre series of things there. He is probably off the market here, which then I think means Garrett Crochet is the most interesting. I mean, most interesting pitching name, probably the most interesting name whatsoever on the market between now and Tuesday. What do you make of the Garrett Crochet situation and these latest leaks that, hey, if you want to pitch me in the playoffs with my innings load, you're going to have to extend me?
Yeah, I mean, it got walked back a little bit last night. I think ESPN updated their story into, oh, well, his agents aren't asking or, you know, aren't making that clear to teams directly. It's just his preference. And, you know, I wrote about this for Top of the Order this morning. If that's just his preference, there's not much he can do. He doesn't have a no trade clause. I don't think you can just refuse to pitch. I mean, there's no collaboration to it like there is, like there was with Josh Hader and the Brewers trying to limit his usage with the Matt Harvey rules back when he was coming back from Tommy John surgery. I mean, there's no time for that collaboration. There's, hey, we're acquiring you to make a playoff push and this is how we're going to use you. And I think he makes some very you know, salient points that, yeah, having that every fifth day routine very likely is or could be that key to staying healthy because, you know, okay, I'm pitching Monday and then I'm pitching again on Saturday and so on. Whereas reliever, you never know. But at the same time, he doesn't really have recourse if someone acquires him. So it's very bizarre. I don't know to what extent it'll scare teams off, but it's also possible teams might just want to see him get through the rest of the season healthy as a starter with the White Sox and then, you know, really have a fully unleashed, let loose Crochet if they acquire him in the offseason because he still has 2 years after this. The White Sox by no means have to trade him.
No, although they're not going to be competitive within his years of control or the years of his major league career or probably the years of his life because of the Chicago White Sox. Quick, before I let you go here, you tweeted out or retweeted the Red Sox payroll accounts, prorated salary tool, which is helpful. How much do you keep your eye on when you see deals and things like that? Teams' proximity, the competitive balance tax or the luxury tax for another term. You guys do a great job at the Fangraphs, like roster resource and depth chart pages, keeping an eye on payroll. But it does strike me that like we're like 10% blind when it comes to what actually is counting toward the CBT. How much are you keeping an eye on that stuff between now and Tuesday?
Yeah, you know, I think it absolutely does matter. I think 2025 matters quite a bit, too. If you're acquiring a player with multiple years of control, you definitely want to look at, okay, what's our team going to look like next year? What's our proximity to the tax line next year? You know, I think if you're going all in, then you're not going to care. Now, if you're a team that's pretty close and maybe more on the periphery, like the Red Sox, for example, you know, they might have a different opinion of, you know, we want to either stay under the tax line with more complimentary additions, or, you know, if we're going to go over the tax line, we want to get some big names and maybe even make a push for that division title with how the Orioles and the Yankees are playing lately. So, yeah, teams are absolutely going to be taking a look at that. I think we'll definitely see some trades where either to increase the prospect return or, you know, help the acquiring team stay under a certain tax line, that we'll see cash included in plenty of trades in the coming days.
Which, yeah, it's always interesting. And, you know, I go back and forth in the Jays position, for example, where they're over the CBT. They're a big market team. You should be using your financial might to eat money, take on money, improve the prospect capital you're getting back in a trade. But you're not that far off from ducking below the CBT. And then next year, your money goes further, right? Which is, you know, sometimes CBT, it sounds like the luxury tax, it sounds like, well, you're just saving ownership money. But if you got a budget, 250 goes further if a smaller chunk of that is paying into the tax. So that's a relevant one there. Really quickly, before I let you go here, James Paxton got DFA'd as the Dodgers get some guys back. Anything there? If you're you're a team that trades away the guy who starts tonight in Toronto and you need just filler depth. Obviously, he's a Canadian guy, so we're semi-interested in him here. Were you surprised that he got DFA'd? And would you imagine teams, probably even a little more competitive than Toronto, kick those tires?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I think that, you know, the stuff has clearly taken a step back and really uncharacteristically quite a few walks for him. But I think there's still something there. You know, would I want him in a playoff rotation? Absolutely not. But I think at absolute minimum, yeah, he should be able to find a job to backfill someone who's traded at the deadline, or maybe even like a very fringe wild card team who would only have to pay him the prorated league minimum. Maybe he thinks that there's a little tweak that they can make there. I would expect that if he wants to, he'll get picked up to fill out the rest of the season.
Yeah, which will be fun. He's a fun guy to watch. Yeah, maybe he wants to go to a more competitive spot than Toronto, but God, someone's gonna have to eat some innings here. The last Ernie Clement pitched last night, man. You gotta get some arms in here if Kikuchi and Garcia are outbound. John Becker, thanks so much, man. Enjoy the deadline.
Thanks, you too.
John Becker of Fangraphs. Again, it's the top of the order piece over at Fangraphs. A couple times a week, he'll drop that. Generally transaction-focused or news-of-the-day focused. Fangraphs, of course, an invaluable resource at this time of year, at all times of years, but they have, you know, hey, you want to learn more about the Randy Arozarena trade and those prospects? Boom, already up. Already got the breakdowns with voices from, you know, their Mariners people, their Rays people, their prospect people, all sorts of stuff. As well. That's going to be a fascinating AL West race. We're going to talk about it a little bit more at 11:30 when Kennedy Landry of Rangers.com joins us. Right now, though, we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk to Trisha Whitaker. She's on the Apple TV Plus broadcast tonight for Jays Rangers. In addition, she's the Rays sideline reporter. And Randy Arozarena getting traded away from that team probably means a lot to the people who cover that team, because Randy Arozarena, by all accounts, good dude to have around. We're going to take a break. Trisha Whitaker joins us on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays lose 13-0 yesterday. Randy Arozarena didn't get in on a ton of that. He went 0 for 3 with an RBI, but he has had a nice little run here turning around his season. He's had a nice little run here over five seasons with the Tampa Bay Rays. Last night after the game, it was announced that they have traded him to the Seattle Mariners. Our next guest had a really nice post on Twitter and Instagram about Randy Arozarena, what he's meant to that team and to her. Trisha Whitaker of Bally Sports Florida, sideline reporter for the Rays and on the Apple TV Plus broadcast tonight, joins us now. Trisha, I didn't expect to be asking you about Randy Arozarena as we head into a Jays Rangers Apple TV Plus game, but how you feeling? Randy Arozarena got traded.
Yeah, it's sad. I'm going to be honest. It's not totally unexpected, but it's definitely sad. You know, I know Randy had a really slow start to the season. He was struggling to start the season, but recently he started to perform like the Randy Arozarena we're used to. And I just think he's the type of guy that just relates to the fans a lot. He plays, you know, he plays with so much passion. And he's truly, truly going to be missed in that clubhouse. And obviously we know what he did in 2020 in the postseason, making some mystery there. And then the World Baseball Classic, he kind of just really burst onto the scene again. He is made to play under the bright lights. And I think Mariners fans are going to absolutely love him, and we are going to miss him. He's one of my favorite players I have ever covered. Always willing to do an interview, always willing to have fun with it. He always remembers the point of the game is to have fun. And sometimes I think players forget about that when they go through rough streaks, but he always remembers the point of the game is to have fun. So, it's too soon. I'm still sad.
I can imagine. I mean, from here where, you know, the Jays have to face him 13 times a year, previously 19 times a year in the expanded playoffs that year in 2020 when he, I don't know, I said the stats earlier, it was something like 28 hits and 10 home runs over 20 games in the playoffs. Just ridiculous. I guess we at least, the silver lining maybe here is that maybe the chances of getting to see him in the postseason again are a little higher here now.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And everybody loves postseason Randy. He's called October Randy for a reason. The bright lights stir something up in him, and he always wears those cowboy boots that fans love to see. He's good for the game. That's the thing about Randy. He is good for the game. And, you know, you can love him or hate him when you're facing him, but it's kind of irrelevant. He's good for the game, and I'm glad that he's going to be under some bright lights in Seattle, too, because, you know, those fans are crazy, and it's a really good place to play. So I'm happy at least for that for baseball.
Yeah, it'll be good. And to the people who you said love him or hate him, the people who hate Randy Arozarena and watching him play, get out of here, man. You're watching it. You're enjoying the sport differently than I am, and I don't like it if you don't like Randy Arozarena. Trisha, yesterday, before you turn the page to Jays Rangers tonight on Apple TV Plus, yesterday's game, Brandon Lau hit one to the 500 level down the right field line. He is the first player to do it since Brandon Lau back in 2019. Yeah. Did you get to ask him about it after the game? He is Mr. Rogers Center at this point.
Oh, totally. He is. And you know what's really funny about you bringing that up? 2019 was my first year with the Rays. And when he did that and Austin Meadows did that in the same, it was like
same inning,
four batters. It was like four batters apart or something. And they both hit one up into the upper level, and I went up there and did a report up there. And I remember going up there and doing a report, and my microphone hardly worked up there because it was so high up. And so I thought that was so funny. Yesterday I'm sitting there and we're looking it up, and I'm like, did he really just do that for the first time since he did that? And so I thought that was really cool, especially for Brandon Lau, because they really need him to get hot. When Brandon Lau is hot, he can carry a team. He's capable of carrying a lineup when he gets hot. But yeah, that was super cool to see, because the last time he did that, 2019, same inning with Austin Meadows, and he's the last one to do it. So that was just one of those weird baseball things that you can't explain.
No, you definitely can. And I mean, we saw him, you mentioned he can carry a team. Yeah, you get four hits and two walks in a game, that's and one of them goes to the 500 level.
Yeah,
I think he homered earlier in the series too. He's on one right now.
He is, and I love how people are always like, "How do you get so much power?" Because it's not like he's a big guy, but he's always just like, "I've just always been that way." He's like, "I've always been able to hit the ball." And I think it goes to show that, like, you know, it's not, you don't have to be some big macho guy to hit a baseball. Like, here's Brandon Lau, who's really around the same height as me. He's not like he's a Yandy Diaz, and he's hammering baseball. So that's another thing I love about Brandon Lau. It's just like, don't talk about how small he is. Like, watch him hit a baseball, and that won't matter.
The interesting thing about this, right, to me right now, is like Brandon Lau has gotten hot a little bit here. Randy Arozarena had really turned it around. Yandy Diaz, before placing on the restricted list with this personal matter, had started to play much better baseball. And the Rays have Jeffrey Springs coming back soon and maybe Drew Rasmussen as well. I know the why of the Rays, you know, selling a Randy Arozarena. Hey, he's going to be expensive next year. They're still a couple games out of it. But doesn't it feel like this team's been playing pretty good baseball lately and might continue to do so?
100%. They've been playing much better baseball recently. They don't look like the team that they looked like in April and May when, you know, it felt like they couldn't hit a beach ball. Right now, they definitely look like themselves. I think Randy getting hot and then getting traded, that might affect the lineup a bit, which was a little disappointing considering they were getting hot. But you're right. Brandon Lau's getting hot. Yandy Diaz, once he comes back from the restricted list, he's probably going to return straight to form. So Jeffrey Springs is coming. He should be back soon. And he's so good when he's on the mound and healthy for the Rays. Drew Rasmussen, if he comes back, what role he's going to play, we're not entirely sure, but we know how filthy he can be. So it's just, they are rounding into form at the right time. Granted, they still have some ground to make up. But they do seem to be rounding into form at the right time. And you know what? Baseball is all about getting hot at the right time. We saw what the Diamondbacks did last year. We saw the Phillies do it a couple years ago. I mean, it's just, you just never know when you're not out of it until you're out of it. And the Rays are not out of it.
And you look at what a wild card series looks like. And geez, if you have Taj Bradley pitching one of those games, like lately, that's an automatic W. He's only allowed a run in one of his last five starts. Obviously dominated a not very great Jays lineup yesterday, but he had just shut the Yankees out over seven, just shut the Guardians out over seven, held the Rangers to one, shut out the Nationals. You'd have to feel pretty good with him at the front. Also, can you please explain to me the pinky and the brain thing with Taj Bradley?
Yeah, that was a really funny reference yesterday. I just asked him, I was like, Taj, you and Alex Jackson, you know, the kind of the battery there that's going on, what's that relationship like? And he looked at me and he goes, you've seen Pinky in the Brain, right? And I go, Taj, I'm a 90s kid. Every 90s kid has seen Pinky in the Brain. He's like, that's what it is. He's like, it's Pinky in the Brain. Because Alex Jackson kind of, he goes to all the meetings, and Taj kind of said, meetings are not my thing, basically, is what he said. And Alex Jackson's kind of, you know, the nerd of that duo, and he comes back and reports to Taj, and Taj just trusts whatever he throws down, and that can't be, you know, overstated, the trust between a pitcher and a catcher like that. And let's be honest, Alex Jackson's numbers at the plate this season have been terrible. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't mattered to the Rays necessarily, because they want him there for Taj, because he's been so good with their best starter. And so that's kind of where the pinky and the brain thing comes in.
Yeah, try to do what we do every year. Take over the wild card. We can do that. Trisha, I saw you pregame yesterday having a pretty lengthy chat with Kevin Kiermaier, who told us all earlier this week that he'll retire at the end of this season. I haven't seen if that's made a broadcast yet or what, so sorry if this is asking you to give stuff away. But what was that conversation like with you and Kevin, another guy I know you had a pretty long relationship with when he was in Tampa Bay?
Oh, yeah. Kevin Kiermaier is one of my all-time favorite players I've ever covered. And before the game 2 days ago, he announced that he would be retiring at the end of the season. I am going to do a one-on-one interview with him today for Apple TV tonight on Friday Night Baseball. So if you tune into the pregame show, you'll get to hear from Kevin Kiermaier. He's actually going to break down his top three catches and defensive plays that he's made in his career. And you're not going to want to miss it. One of them is with the Blue Jays from last season. So He's just so good about that type of stuff too. And that's one of the reasons I love covering him. He was always willing to do interviews, but yes, he announced he would retire. He just kind of said the wear and tear on his body, he couldn't take it anymore. And you understand that. He talks a lot about playing on turf and stuff, and the way that he plays is 100%. And he's always said that throughout his career. He's like, I'm going to play 100%. And I make no apologies for that. And of course that does come at a risk for your body. And I think he's starting to see that kind of happened to his body at 34 years old. He's got a third kid on the way. His wife, Marissa, and he and his wife, Marissa, will have three kids, and they live in Tampa in the off season. So, and I just think KK is at a point in his life where he sees that it's time to kind of hang it up. And he has dazzled us in center field for so many years, and I'm so grateful to have covered him. But you do understand that, and you do understand prioritizing the right things in life, and that's what he's doing.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it'll be sad to not watch him parole center field anymore. He played right field last night for a bit because that game was so out of hand and the Jays were just doing weird things. Trisha, let's pivot to this Apple TV Plus exclusive game tonight. It is the Jays and the Rangers. You'll be a part of that broadcast. You've seen a lot of the Jays lately between a couple Apple TV Pluses and, you know, this the Rays obviously having been here a couple times. How interested are you in this Jays team over the next couple days as it pertains to the deadline? Like this might be the last we see of Yusei Kikuchi as a Blue Jay tonight.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I live here now. I might as well apply for residency because I've been here for a week and a half. Because we had Blue Jays on Apple in Toronto last Friday. Then the Rays played here, and now we have Blue Jays on Apple today too. So, but you're right. I have been around the Blue Jays a lot recently, and you know, there's really no way to sugarcoat it. It's been disappointing. It's been very, very disappointing for the Blue Jays this season. And to be honest, you know, I said this earlier on a radio show. I remember. I started with the Rays in 2019. And in 2019, everybody was pretty excited about the Blue Jays and the young core they had coming up and all the potential there. You know, they were very excited for that because we know when the Blue Jays are good, it's good for baseball, but it's also just like so much fun to watch the fans in Canada rally around one team. You know, it's one country for one team. And I just think that's so cool. So it has been disappointing because there was so much excitement surrounding the Blue Jays. And, you know, I think that all the trade rumors and stuff at the deadline swirling around, certainly what you want to hear right now because you want them to be in contention. I think I see a team that just has not lived up to expectations offensively, specifically. Obviously, Bo Bichette this year has been disappointing. Vlad has finally come into form, which has been good, but he did have a slow start to the season. So, you know, you do hope that they can just prepare for 2025, and maybe that's what they'll do at the deadline. I guess you don't really know what's going to happen, but you would hope that in 2025 it gets better because, you know, hey, this is the AI.
Oh, we may have lost.
They're going anywhere.
We lost you there for a second, Trisha, but we got you back.
Oh, you got me. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I don't know where I was in my rant, but I'll start with the AL East. the Yankees aren't going anywhere. The Orioles aren't going anywhere because they've got so many young studs. So it's not going to get any easier for the Jays in the AL East. And the Rays are going to get better next year because they're going to have all their injured guys coming back. So, you know, I think you hope that they prepare for beyond 2024 at this point.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's kind of the spot they're in. And you do still have Vlad, who's on a nice little heater here. You do still have Bo Bichette, and you hope next year's better and some of these pitchers. But, yeah, like you laid it out, the AL East is not getting easier anytime soon. The other team we're going to see tonight is the Rangers, and suddenly the AL West is wide open. The Mariners had like a 10-game lead a month ago, and now it's the Astros in first. And the Mariners only a game out, and the Rangers only 2.5 games out. Rangers have won 5 in a row, and even though those are against the White Sox, they still count. What have you made of this Rangers team as you prep for this game tonight? They're very hot and right back in it as the defending champs.
They are hot and they are right back in it. They just have to continue that. Like you said, it was the White Sox, so that certainly helps. But their offense has to kind of, you know, perform like we saw last year. I think they're waiting for some reinforcements a little bit, some guys on the injured list who their lineup could use back ASAP. Josh Smith has been a guy who has kind of burst on the scene for them this year. He's been very, very good for that lineup. He kind of forced their hand, turned himself into an everyday starter. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Rangers do. It has been a disappointing first half for them, but like you said, the West is kind of wide open at this point. And if they can make a run here in the second half, you know, we could see them make a push for the postseason. I would not say, based on the way that we've seen them play throughout the last few months, that they would be a real contender in the postseason. But hey, baseball's weird. You never know. It'll be interesting to see how the West shakes out for sure, though.
Yeah, it'll be a fun race here. Obviously, a good American League wildcard race, a very crowded National League wildcard race. Before I let you go here, Trisha, we know we have a good sense of what the Rays are doing. We have a sense of what the Blue Jays are doing. Is there a team around baseball outside of those two that you're most fascinated to see what they do or what they're able to accomplish between now and the deadline on Tuesday?
You know, it's really funny that you say that, because the team that I am most interested in after covering them for a week and a half is the Blue Jays.
Okay.
You know, I do want to see what they're going to do. I want to see what Bo's going to do. I want to see what's going to go on with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So, and obviously Kikuchi, he's stirring around in those rumors too. I am interested to see what the Rays are going to do, obviously. But I do think the Blue Jays, that's an interesting one to me for sure.
Yeah, it should be, fun's not entirely the right word. It should be very, very interesting. Tonight should be fun. Looking forward to seeing you on the Apple TV Plus broadcast. Once again, Tricia, thanks so much for taking the time out.
Thanks for having me.
Tricia Whitaker, Bally Sports Florida, Rays sideline reporter, as well as on these Apple TV Plus broadcasts. And tonight's game is Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus, so it is only available to watch on Apple TV Plus. New and returning Apple TV Plus subscribers can access a 2-month free trial of Apple TV Plus at apple.co/MLBGift. Fans can find step-by-step instructions on how to watch that on MLB.com or Apple Support or Google it. Please don't DM me to explain it to you. Just Google it. You'll figure it out. And a reminder that, yes, we still have a radio broadcast on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Fan 590. It'll be Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on the call for you on that one. And if you want the hometown broadcast while watching on Apple TV, you do have the option to toggle to our radio broadcast as well, so you could see the Apple TV Plus visual broadcast and have Ben and Chris talking over it, and hopefully it's synced up. I've done that in the past as well, just to check it out, and it's something you can do there as well. So, talked off the top, and by the way, we're going to talk to Kennedy Landry of Rangers.com and MLB.com in a couple minutes here, but I had mentioned a couple times earlier, mentioned off the top, the Chris Bassitt demon comments, talked to Keegan Mathison about it. I wanted to play that clip just for the full context and for you to understand exactly what we're talking about if you missed it. Here's Chris Bassitt last night after the game talking to reporters.
I'd say there's a lot of so-called demons that a lot of people are fighting right now between obviously today, what's going on. Just it is what it is. It's got to be grown-ups and put a better effort forward.
What do you mean by demons?
I mean, everything that's going on, being down 12-0, being down 5-0, whatever it may be, giving up that many hits, not being able to hit, the trade deadline, who's going to be here, who's not going to be here. There's a million different things right now that are just not great. I don't think there's one person with clean hands right now. I really don't. I don't think we've done anything well this year.
Hey, sounds like me when that one guy on Twitter says I've been too negative about a team that's 10 games under 500, just listing off all the things the team hasn't done well. On the one hand, you do appreciate that level of honesty and accountability. On the other, you don't love that guys on the team feel this way, especially guys who are going to be here for a little while. I'm not saying Chris Bassitt's wrong to feel that way. Everything he's saying is legitimate. I more mean from how do you steer this thing around? How do you try to, you know, take George Springer's attitude from the other week and say, hey, this, you know, the next 2 months are about building good habits and creating, you know, positive momentum and getting guys individually, you know, on a better footing and things like that. How do you do that when there are nights where you lose 13-0 and your bullpen can't, you know, get through an inning and you can't put any hits together? And yeah, Taj Bradley's awesome. But there were three innings of relief there. You got two hits in the first three batters of the game. You had runners on first and second with only one out in the first against Taj Bradley. And yeah, he's nasty. I broke his stuff down on Blue Jay Central before the game last night. You can live with one of the best pitchers in the American League shutting you out for a few innings, but you didn't get to that bullpen. You dropped another series. The Rays, you know, it's not like the Rays were that far above the Blue Jays in the standings or in run differential just a couple weeks ago. And while, you know, if the Jays were at 500, I still don't think anyone would feel particularly good about it. But look at what the Rays have been able to do. They've won 8 of their last 10 series and split one of them. So they're 8-1-1 over their last 10 series. It's not unbelievable baseball to get them all the way back in the race, but they've played competitive baseball in what is shaping up to be a selling season. You look at the Houston Astros, who 6 weeks ago were in the exact same spot as the Blue Jays. And we were saying, you know, I think when the Jays played against the Astros had started to turn it around. That is something that bad teams are capable of. The Texas Rangers haven't played unbelievable baseball either, and they're back 2.5 out. And yeah, they're in the AL West, so it's not the same as the AL East. But you look around the American League, and you know, it's a disappointing. This is a disappointing year, regardless. But it doesn't look like the top of the American League is all that strong. The Yankees have been one of the worst teams in baseball over the last month. The Orioles are obviously quite good, but we'll see what they do at the deadline. They have some real holes to address. the Guardians have the best record in the American League. You know, maybe you don't fully believe that because of some of the AL Central effect there. Although worth noting, like I noted when the Jays played them, they've been pretty good outside of the Central as well. They're actually only two games above 500 in their own division, and they've gone 18 games above 500 against everyone else. So, you know, relevant stuff there. Anyway, all of that is to say, you absolutely understand what Chris Bassett's feeling, and you know, probably this after the deadline, the story of the 2024 season in August and September is going to be, how do you exercise those demons? How do you eradicate that feeling in the clubhouse? How do you get a Chris Bassett back to feeling better about the direction this team's headed in 2025? How do you get, you know, how do you work through 12 to 14 bullpen options between AAA and the majors to figure out who could be a part of this next year? You know, you see, obviously, Yariel Rodriguez is front of mind in terms of, you know, making a case for a really good case so far for a rotation spot next year, assuming that the workload allows. Bowden France is going to have an opportunity here. Spencer Horwitz has done well with his opportunity, but there's a lot on the line here. David Schneider has not hit well for a couple months, and obviously he's shown that upside at times. Still love the approach at the plate, but he's back to struggling with the fastball. He's back to that you know, OPS being down below 700 now. The Jays yesterday trotted out basically their everyday lineup, and there are only two hitters with an OPS above 700. There are a lot of guys individually who need to make some work between now and the end of September as well to enter the offseason, enter 2025 in better standing. And we talked a little bit about it with Keegan because he had a piece up at BlueJays.com. The auditions have started for next year, and maybe it's just for bench roles and things like that, but there is still a leverage to these games at the individual level, and generally the way baseball works is if guys play better individually, the team will play better. Now, I know some people maybe don't care that much. Hey, you finish worse in the standings, you know, your lottery odds are slightly better in the draft, even though baseball's lottery is the weirdest of the lotteries, and you know, sliding one extra spot probably matters a little less in baseball, or is at least a little harder to project given all the qualifications of who can and cannot finish in the top six, et cetera. But you still want the team to be playing more competitive baseball because you want some signs that this could be a better version of this team in 2025. And right now, as much as there's still Vlad and Bo and Springer's been better, and there are three parts of a good rotation locked up for next year, this is a team that's 10 games under 500 and has like almost a minus 100 run differential at this point. And you're banking on just internal improvement and spending $50 million in free agency to be better. They've got a lot of work to do between now and Tuesday, and they've got a lot of work to do on starting that internal improvement early after the deadline when they can focus on that. So, a lot going on. Let's take a break. Let's size up this Rangers team. It's Yusei Kikuchi against Andrew Heaney tonight, Kevin Gausman against Michael Lorenzen tomorrow, Jose Berríos against one of my favorite pitchers in the league for some reason, John Gray, on Sunday to wrap that one out. And then, yeah, the Jays got to hope these guys can give them some length because it's a doubleheader day on Monday as well. No rest for this bullpen coming until Thursday. You've also, in addition to the doubleheader Wednesday, or doubleheader Monday, you have a day game after a night game on Wednesday. So a lot going on before you get that Thursday off day here. Let's take a break. Let's talk to Kennedy Landry of Rangers.com, of MLB.com. Size up this Rangers squad that we're going to see for the next three. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Yusei Kikuchi against Andrew Heaney tonight. That is Andrew Heaney's warm-up music. That's a little System of a Down. We could get System of a Down first, System of a Down tonight. Andrew Heaney against Addison Barger. If Addison Barger finally plays, he's been called up and just not used whatsoever for a week. One text in the text line just to close out here. Richard in Bowmanville, who wasn't listening to the show earlier, I guess, asked about the Jays taking a look at James Paxton for the rest of the year. Well, that was something we had kicked around on the show, but there are reports out there today that the Red Sox are working on a deal to acquire him. So probably makes a little more sense for a team that's competitive to get in on a guy like that and slot him into whether the rotation or bump someone else to the bullpen or whatever. Speaking of the bullpen, it's the best closer in all of North America. It's Kennedy Landry of Rangers.com, of MLB.com. Kennedy, thank you for doing this. How we doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are y'all doing up there?
I mean, I was going to say, yeah, baseball-wise, not great. Otherwise, we're pretty good. okay, I want to ask you, this is going to be, I see your background there with all the album covers. It looks very much like my living room. I love it. You are someone who tweets a lot about guys' walk-up music and warm-up music and things like that. It's something I very much appreciate and pay attention to as well. Why is that something that you are so keen to track and keep an eye on for people?
I don't know. I've just always liked music, as you can see. This album wall is my pride and joy. And, you know, I like kind of the ins and outs and the personality of baseball a lot, what these guys like outside of the game, outside of the field. And I think the walk-up songs are obviously a big way for them to show their personalities. So, yeah, I just, like I said, always like music, different types of music. I'm open book, a lot of things. I like a lot of different types of music and all of those things. So I love getting to talk to guys and learn why they picked a walk-up song and things like that. So it's a lot of fun for me personally. I tweet a lot about pop culture and everything too. So music is just one part of that.
Do you think tonight would be the first instance of System of a Down against System of a Down walk-up music with Andrew Heaney has Aerials and Addison Barger, if he plays, comes out to BYOB? That's got to be a league first, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's got to be. I don't think I've ever heard that walk-up song before Andrew Heaney had it. So he recently changed it a couple of weeks ago. It used to be a Drake song. He said he was looking for a little bit of a change. He has a mustache now instead of a full beard. He changed his walk-up song. So he's a whole new man now.
Yeah. And you don't want to roll into, I guess you don't get your warm-up music played when you're on the road anyway, but you don't want to roll into Toronto with Drake as your music, especially after the last couple months here. So you suggested, by the way, I haven't seen Twisters yet. How was it? And what is the song that you want Andrew Heaney or John Gray to come up to?
I loved it. I thought it was a phenomenal film. I loved the original from the 90s. It was great. This is a great follow-up. The CGI, the effects were phenomenal. Glenn Powell is a bona fide movie star. I highly suggest everybody go see it. If you've been through a tornado, it might be a little bit of PTSD, but it was a great film. And it's something, it says the word Oklahoma. I had never heard the song before because country music is my one blind spot. But it's No Rain in Oklahoma, something like that. I don't know. But it's great. Like, it goes hard, real like country rock. And both Andrew Heaney and John Gray are from Oklahoma. So it's like, I think they should think about this.
There you go. Yeah. Jason Isbell has a King of Oklahoma. That wouldn't be bad. Either. Okay. Let's, before everyone hangs up and turns the radio off, let's talk about a little baseball. This is a Rangers team. We can talk about some fun stuff because things are going well. They've won five in a row. Yeah. Four of those are against the White Sox, but they still count. The Jays had their only good week of the season when they played the White Sox like seven times in 10 days. What's going on here? This team does see, White Sox caveat aside, does seem like this Rangers team's playing a little better baseball lately.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Nathaniel Lowe said the other day, he's like, hey, I don't care, a win's a win. And it's been a while since we've really put our foot on somebody's neck, that we've really sat here and blown somebody out, swept somebody, things like that. So yeah, it was the White Sox, but you sweep four games. It's hard to sweep four games no matter who the opponent is. The Rangers had four against the A's earlier this year. We're unable to sweep that one and things like that. So outside of that, the vibes are just better. I hate to be like a vibes person.
It matters.
But, you know, it does. I think it really does matter. And, you know, going into the All-Star break, they ended on a high, had a nice little win streak going there. Then they opened the break with the Orioles, you know, the best team in the American League. And, you know, they lost two of three there, but they won the last one, you know, go into the series against the White Sox on a high note. And, you know, they're going into Toronto on this nice little win streak. So yeah, I think they're playing better baseball. Most importantly, the offense looks to be coming out of that, you know, 6 week long rut they were in. The pitching hasn't been the problem all year long. The pitching continues to be really good. And the vibes are so much better. There's laughter in the clubhouse these days when we go in there. So that, I think that's the biggest thing with this club right now.
So we look now too, and not only are they playing a little better, but you've reported, via the Rangers, Josh Jung starts a rehab assignment today. Evan Carter maybe only a week behind that. Cody Bradford threw two innings on a rehab on Tuesday. Tyler Mahle threw his fifth rehab start yesterday. That's a lot of pieces coming back in addition to this. Like, obviously, we're going to talk trade deadline stuff, too, given that it's July 26th. But they've got to feel, even though they haven't played great baseball overall, being 2.5 out and having that many pieces coming back in the next couple weeks, they've got to feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, and I think Max Scherzer said it last night. I mean, these injury returns feel kind of like a trade deadline acquisition in a way. Not to say the Rangers aren't going to make any moves come, you know, July 30th, but you get an all-star third baseman back. You get a former Rookie of the Year candidate before his injury back. You get Jake DeGrom back eventually, and Tyler Mahle, who's been one of the most consistent pitchers in baseball when he's been healthy. I mean, things are really looking up for the Rangers, and then you add all of those things back in. All the ingredients are there for them to go and run on a run in August and September, especially, and take over this kind of weak division this year. There are other holes to fill. There's a lot of, you know, different things to think about in these next 5 days for the Rangers front office, but they have to feel really good about the injury returners they have coming back.
Certainly. And again, they've made up the ground in the AL West, or we should say the Mariners have made up the ground in the AL West on behalf of the Astros and the Rangers. So Houston at the top now, Seattle game back, Texas only 2.5 back of that. And, you know, even if it's not the division, Texas has closed that wild card margin to 5 games here. As the defending champs with the payroll they have, they were probably always going to give this, you know, every opportunity. Do you think they've played themselves back into being buyers between now and Tuesday now, or do you think they'll kind of sit on that, hey, we're getting guys back?
Yeah, I think they have kind of played themselves back into this. I don't think the Rangers were ever going to, you know, fully sell off all of their expiring contracts in the, you know, this 2 week window, regardless of how much they gained, how much ground they gained or lost or whatever. But there's no way you can look at what's been done in the last 10 days and say like, hey, they have played themselves into a position. I mean, again, this division is what we all thought the AL Central was going to be coming into the year. And the bottom of the American League, you know, those few teams that are fighting for those last few wildcard spots, you know, there's ground to be made up there, but I think it's very plausible, especially, like I said, if the Rangers can go on a run in August and September. So I think Chris Young and Bruce Bochy kind of challenged the clubhouse to be like, hey, like, you guys need to tell us what to do. Basically, your play on the field will tell us what moves we need to make, what moves we will make. And they've played themselves into at least considering being more of a buyer than they were 10 days ago.
Yeah, it's got to be fun. What areas do you see them addressing if they do go that route? I mean, this is a team that has 5 starting pitchers with an ERA between like 3.25 and 3.75. That's a pretty nice luxury there. So I'd imagine the answer isn't starting pitching. Where could you see them adding if they do?
Yeah, I think this team went healthy, which is a large caveat when you look at this team, but they have, I think, 9 starting pitchers. And especially, you know, those 5 who've been really good and Jacob deGrom, who will come back eventually. So starting pitching is not a need. I think they could definitely use a left-handed reliever because the only one they have right now is a rookie, Jacob Latz, who has performed admirably, but that's the only rookie in the bullpen. That's the only lefty in the bullpen. And we saw how not having any lefties in the pitching staff fared for the Astros last year in the ALCS. They should probably at least consider getting another lefty, even with Cody Bradford coming back. And a bat. I think they really would love to have a left-handed bat, preferably in the outfield or a DH spot. Obviously, Leo De Taveras has been the center fielder for a couple of years now. He's performed, you know, well enough. He's your 9-hole hitter, but if the Rangers are able to upgrade, add another bat, Adolis Garcia is not having the best year. He seems to be kind of coming out of his funk, but anytime you can add another guy who can lengthen this lineup behind, you know, the Seegers, the Simeons, the Josh Smiths, who has been phenomenal this year, you'll have to consider that. So you know, somebody like maybe if the A's are willing to move Britt Rooker or Luis Robert Jr. in the White Sox, you know, a few of those big names that you've seen floated around here.
Yeah, and I guess one of the nice things, there is no nice thing about, hey, we've gotten the worst production from the designated hitter spot of any team in baseball, but it does mean you don't have to care positionally. You just get anyone. If you got to plug them in DH, you got to make it a rotating off day. When you're dead last at the DH spot, there's a lot of ways you can make that work. What did you make of, obviously Seattle and Houston are going to be buying here too. Seattle goes out and gets Randy Arozarena last night. John Morosi reporting before we came on here that they're not done. They're still looking for another bat and another impact reliever. I'd have to imagine the Astros are going to buy here as well. How spicy is this division going to be the next couple days?
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of almost exactly like it was last year in the final weeks of the season, how the Mariners came rolling up in August, and what I think they rattled off like 13 straight wins in August to get themselves back into this race. That's what it feels like this year. I think, you know, Jerry DePoto, you know, what it was like midnight or 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time when they traded for Randy Arozarena, Adolis Garcia's best friend. Obviously, I think they're going to make some moves. Things get spicy with the Rangers and Astros all the time anyway. So when you look at, you know, what things can look like on the trade market here and what Seattle is going to be doing up north, it'll be a lot of fun, I think, seeing how these three teams kind of battle it out these last few months of the season, looking to win this division. The Astros obviously have won the division for many, many years straight. They've gone to many, many ALCSs, and they feel kind of inevitable. As an SEC girl, I think I said last time I was on here, they feel like Nick Saban in Alabama to me. I don't believe they don't win this division until it's right in front of me. So I think obviously the Astros overtook first place, but it'll be very interesting to see how these three teams operate at the deadline and how they play going forward.
Jays could do them some favors. The Rangers came in here in August last year and swept the four set, which was, you know, if we didn't already have concerns about the 2023 Blue Jays, they were there. If the Rangers sweep again, they're going to be in pretty good position. Let's talk about this series a little bit. So Andrew Heaney is going to start tonight. He picked up his $13 million option for this year. It's got to be a godsend in retrospect that he did that. He's running with a 3.60 ERA here. Much better season than last year, his first with Texas. What's gone into him being a little steadier this season?
Yeah, I think it goes back to vibe again. I've asked him, you know, what's working so well for you this year. He's like, I just feel more confident. I'm throwing my strikes. I'm throwing my pitches. Everything just seems to be working so well for him. The fastball, the slider, you know, mixing in a couple of changeups here and there. He just looks like he knows what he's doing out there on the mound, which is, you know, strange to say for a guy who's 30. But last year, it just didn't feel like he always knew what he wanted to do with his pitches. He just looks so much more comfortable and confident. He works really well with Jonah Heim behind the plate. And, you know, Mike Maddux does a really good job game planning for these pitchers. And Andrew Heaney has maybe been the most improved this year for one year over the other in terms of pitching. Yeah, you're right. It has been a godsend for the Rangers with all the injuries they had to the pitching staff. Andrew Heaney comes in. He's at your five starter probably. And he's pitched way better than a number five starter this year. He's been phenomenal for the Rangers. I kind of hate to think where they would be without him. And, you know, he got off to a rough start. I think he had a 7 ERA after the first month. And the fact that he's even gotten it down as much as he has is, you know, out of this world.
And I mean, it's pretty fascinating for the Rangers to have the payroll they have, to have struggled the way they have. And then you look at the rotation, it's like, well, Andrew Heaney only makes $13 million. Michael Lorenzen only makes $4.5 million. Nate Eovaldi only makes $17 million. John Gray only makes, what, $14 million? Like, although you add all those up and it's a decent payroll, but it's not like they're paying these guys $25-30 million. Like, the Jays have a nice rotation. They pay, you know, Chris Bassett and Kevin Gausman and Jose Berríos more than Texas are paying any of these guys. Like, they've been able to put together a free agent heavy rotation pretty efficiently. That's not, it's not something we normally see teams able to do, especially the high spending teams that are often like, and I know the Rangers have spent on DeGrom and Scherzer and stuff like that, but they've done pretty well at the back end of the rotation.
Yeah, I think, you know, DeGrom is obviously holding down a lot of the payroll on the pitching side, and Seager and Semien on the hitting side, but everything else, I think they've been fairly savvy in how they've decided to spend their money and create a really, you know, solid roster. Obviously, one that's underperformed a bit this year, but it still on paper looks really good. And especially how these guys, like you said, Michael Lorenzen's having a really good year. That he signed on the last day of spring training. He said he had a chip on his shoulder the size of Texas because of how the negotiations went for him this offseason, and he's come out and been really good for the Rangers, especially when, you know, they didn't re-sign Jordan Montgomery, had Cody Bradford goes down a week into the season, a lot of injuries to this rotation, like I said, and he's has a sub-4 ERA. He looked really good, and a lot of these guys have, I think everybody but Andrew Heaney's been on the injured list at some point this year in this rotation, which is kind of insane when you look, like I said, there's 9 starting pitchers. They've all been on the injured list, but, you know, Chris Young is, he knows what he's doing, it feels like.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And then the nice thing about Lorenzen, too, if the Rangers can get back into this playoff picture, he's a guy who's pitched out of the bullpen before. Also, John Gray just pitches out of the bullpen every once in a while. Like, what's it? John Gray seems like a fascinating guy anyway. Is he just, like, putting his hand up like, hey, I got a bullpen day today anyway, a side session. Just throw me out of the pen. What's going on there? It's happened a couple times now.
Bruce Bochy devil magic, man. That's what we started calling it in the postseason last year. Bruce Bochy just, you know, has some thoughts sometimes. And I think the first time it happened, it was in Atlanta. Like, they just, you know, they say in the press box, Mike, like, oh, John Gray warming up in the bullpen. And we all look around like, what do you mean John Gray warming up in the bullpen? And he comes out and he's electric, like, you know, just pounding the strike zone, you know, scoreless inning. Then he does it again a few weeks later. And we're like, okay, I guess this is a thing now. And yeah, it seems like he's just throwing his bullpen days in real life games now. You know, Boach said he seems to like it. John Gray is a fascinating man. Yes. He's like, I wasn't sure about it at first. And now it kind of feels like you're in college again, where you just kind of the schedule is, we're playing around with it and things like that. And he does really good in his starts after he makes a relief appearance. So I guess maybe they'll keep doing that. It's worked so far.
Why not? So we won't see him this series, but how has the Max Scherzer return experience been? Is he, you know, back to where you're trusting him to be Max Scherzer when he's taking the ball?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday in the finale against the White Sox, he pretty much looked like vintage Max Scherzer. You know, six innings, one run, nine strikeouts, one walk. I mean, it's Max Scherzer, man. Like, it's one of those things, you know, you watch a lot of baseball and then this guy who's a Hall of Famer just is suddenly on the team you cover, and you have to, you know, see how different it is and how, you know, different he is. Obviously, he's a very intense guy on days and pitches, but he's so smart and talks about pitching really well. And he had a couple of hiccups coming back from that injury. He had off-season surgery, but he's looked exactly how you want Max Scherzer to look going into the home stretch of this season. I think the Rangers are very lucky, obviously, to have him. And he seems like he's pain-free. He said he feels really good, and he's ready to go out for his next turn. He likes to make his post every day, and it's going well right now.
On the offensive side, so obviously the rotation, when healthy, has picked up. They've done their part. Again, five guys with the ERA between 325 and 375. The consistency is remarkable. On the position player side, it's been a little more up and down. Marcus Semien, a guy we know very well here, has struggled this year. But then you look in July, and he's hitting over 300 and slugging over 500 and OPS over 900. Was that just kind of a, hey, it was always bound to happen? Has something changed for Marcus Semien over the last couple of weeks here?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Bochy has always been, hey, I'm not moving Marcus Semien out of the leadoff spot. Marcus, we trust our guys, and Marcus is going to come out of this eventually. It took about 6 weeks there. Probably a bit longer than anybody would have liked, but Marcus is the picture of consistency. He was always going to come out of that slump he was in, and right now it seems like it's coming at the right time. I mean, this is a guy that plays every day. He wants to be out there every day. He wants to score 101 runs a year. All of these things. He hits in front of Corey Seager, so that really works well for him in terms of scoring a lot of runs. So this was always going to happen. I think nothing really changed. He's looking like Marcus Semien now.
Yeah, the only thing is he missed two games this year, so he's only on pace for 160, yeah. Which would be be the lowest. 160 games would be the lowest in a full season for him since 2018, when he played in 159. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And I think the 159 was when his kid was born. So, like,
unreal.
The only reason he missed Dave.
Unreal consistency there. You mentioned Josh Smith a little earlier. He has obviously emerged as a pretty important, like, everyday middle of the order bat. You know, good defensively and things like that. What has that done for this team? I know people like Josh Smith, but it looked like, I don't know, last year it looked like maybe he was going to be like a super utility guy, but now he's in there every day, right in the middle of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was one of four prospects the Rangers got back in the Joey Gallo deal in 2021. Made his debut the following year. You're absolutely right. He was a shortstop in the minors. He kind of became a super utility guy throughout his time with the big league club. He's really good defensively at multiple positions. I think he's appeared at second, third, short, center, and left in the big leagues, if I remember correctly. So he can play everywhere. And then, you know, Josh Young gets hurt first four games of the season, got hit with a pitch, and Josh Smith gets in there. And They don't miss a beat. I mean, Josh Smith has been phenomenal this year. He's having career years, career highs at almost every offensive statistic. He looks like, you know, I covered him in college. We were in school at the same time, and he looks like the guy that I covered in college now. It takes guys, obviously, a while to adjust to big league pitching and things like that. But the way he's really transformed himself in his swing this offseason coming into this year, he looks like a completely different player. He made some tweaks with his swing and with his stance this offseason. He went to the Dominican Winter League for 2 weeks, and then he came home because they weren't playing him enough. He just worked out at Globe Life Field all offseason with the hitting coaches and made himself into kind of an irreplaceable player for the Rangers this season. Bruce Bochy loves him. Hitting coaches love him. Everybody loves this kid. He works hard. Like, he plays good defense. He runs the bases well. He does everything really well. And when you lose an all-star third baseman like Josh Jung, you hope somebody can just be, you know, replacement level, can, you know, make it not be a gaping hole in your lineup. And Josh Smith has done more and kind of made things difficult for Bruce Bochy when Josh Jung gets back. You know, where are you going to play this guy now? You got to keep him in the lineup.
Well, I mentioned the DH spot is a wasteland, so maybe some you can rotate around there. Also, way to get the reference in. I almost forgot for 1 second you went to LSU. That's right.
I did.
That's right. That's a great sweater.
Women's basketball national championship. Don't forget.
Of course. Are you locked in for the Olympic basketball or what? Are you a basketball person?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, I just love the Olympics. I love sports. I used to love the Olympics when I was growing up. So I was just watching Peacock. I was watching like handball yesterday or something. I don't know.
Nice.
It's all great and fun.
Yeah, no, it's a blast. I'll be mostly the basketball games are like they're all going to take place during this show. And I'm just going to have I'm going to have a separate TV off over there with Olympic stuff on. Kennedy, thanks so much for taking the time out. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all for having me. Have fun this week.
Will do. Kennedy Landry of Rangers.com, of MLB.com. Really great coverage of that team over there. It is an Apple TV Plus game tonight, as a reminder. So Apple TV Plus will have you on the television side. We will have the game on the radio side on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Fan 590. And if you are watching the Apple TV Plus broadcast and care to do so, you can toggle the audio over and hear Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on that one. Everything goes back to normal. Tomorrow we'll have the television broadcasts again for the Saturday and Sunday games. It'll be Ben Schulman on the TV side for those ones, and Eric Smith on radio, because, of course, Dan Schulman, as he was explaining to us earlier this week on the show and on the broadcast, is off to France to be the voice of the Canadian men's and women's basketball team at the Olympics, alongside our pal Megan McPeak and Nabil Kareem. This series gets going with Yusei Kikuchi against Andrew Heaney tonight. Could be Yusei Kikuchi's last start as a Toronto Blue Jay. That'd be interesting to see. I'm going to go down as a fan tonight, which will be fun. Kikuchi's seen a decent amount of this Rangers team, but a lot of it is like older sample. So he has 67 plate appearances against this Rangers team. 28 of them belong to Marcus Semien. Obviously, they were in the same division for years before they both became Toronto Blue Jays. Semien 6-for-28 against them with 7 strikeouts. So pretty good results for Kikuchi there. Robbie Grossman and Nathaniel Lowe have both had a pretty good time against Kikuchi, though. Adelis Garcia and Robbie Grossman have both homered off of him. On the other side, the Jays haven't seen a ton of Andrew Heaney. George Springer has seen a lot of him. He's 5-for-16 against him career, so not bad, nothing crazy. Justin Turner's 3-for-10 with a pair of home runs. Vlad has also homered off Andrew Heaney in the past, so should be an interesting matchup in that one. And then the rest of the series is Kevin Gausman against Michael Lorenzen on Saturday. That's a 3:07 start. And then Jose Berríos against John Gray on Sunday, a 1:37 start. There's just to close out the text line for the week. Frank in Calgary asks, if this is his final start, what's your lasting Kikuchi memory? Honestly, just the kind of constant improvement. He came over here as this guy. He had been an all-star. He got the contract and still just like tirelessly always getting better, looking for that marginal edge, cut the walk rate, cut the home run rate. The stuff plays better. The curveball improves. He is just a guy who, you know, every month seems to have added something or gotten sharper at something. Greg and Peterborough also asked if they could trade Kikuchi for an up-and-coming starting rotation pitcher. Maybe. That's probably aiming a little high. Maybe if you send some other stuff out. I don't know that you get someone back that you can plug into the rotation moving forward. That's a pretty big return for a rental guy. Certainly not a Crochet type, but maybe someone who's in AAA and can take a couple starts. That's it for this week. Thank you to Keegan Mathison, John Becker, Trisha Whitaker, and Kennedy Landry for joining us. Thank you to Andrew Adams, Amit Mann, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. We will be back Monday, 10 to 12. We'll set up a doubleheader that day, and then we will be 10 to 2 on Tuesday for the trade deadline. Of course, all you care about this trade right now. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you Monday.